kind of knowledge of God that Augustine lands on is the knowledge of God's mercy, and learning to recognize how even when Augustine was so scattered, God was with him, guiding him toward himself, toward the church.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast from the Augustine Institute. My name is Joseph Pierce, your host, and I'm delighted to have as my guest today, one of my colleagues here at the Augustine Institute, John Sehorn, Assistant Professor of Theology. John, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Joseph.
Perhaps we could begin by just telling us a little bit about yourself, your own background, and how you ended up at the Augustine Institute.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'll have to give you, you know, the very short version of that. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, in the great Pacific Northwest. A lot of family roots there. Ended up uprooting for college and went to Arizona State University, just in Tempe, right next to Phoenix, where I met and married my wife while I finished my bachelor's in history. At that time, I was trying to discern some things about God's direction for my life, for our life together, and ended up going to the University of Notre Dame for a master's degree in early Christian studies. Fell in love with the Church Fathers and stayed on at Notre Dame to get a PhD in the history of Christianity.
Wonderful. Well, quite clearly, you're well qualified to speak on the topic of today's podcast, which is St. Augustine's Confessions. And of course, St. Augustine is one of the giants of the church, one of the greatest saints in the history of the church. Would you maybe, before we go in to discuss the confessions themselves, tell us something maybe about St. Augustine himself?
Sure. So, St. Augustine, of course, wasn't always a saint. He's maybe most famous for having a past as a sinner. He was born in 354. So you have to imagine a time when the Roman Empire has only been tolerating and even promoting Christianity for about three or four decades at this point. He's born in North Africa, which, of course, at the time was part of the Roman Empire. His mother, St. Monica, was a Christian, a Catholic. His father, Patricius, or Patrick, you can call him, was not until his deathbed. But Augustine grew up knowing the name of Christ, even though it wasn't until he was about 32 that he had his famous conversion.
Okay, and you know, there is one of my favorite poems is a poem by Gerard Manley Hopkins called The Wreck of the Deutschland, and in that, in one of the stanzas, Hopkins talks about there being two types of conversion. He talks about the ones that are crash pool or the slow melting of St. Austin, St. Augustine. So obviously we have these sudden, dramatic conversions like St. Paul on the road to Damascus, but St. Augustine, it took much longer. So obviously this is told in his book, Confessions. Mm-hmm. So would you like to tell us about maybe something about, should we say, man, that going from the sublime Gerard Manley Hopkins to the ridiculous, the Beatles, the long and winding road of St. Augustine's conversion as told in the Confessions?
Yeah, no, it's interesting that Hopkins puts it that way, because perhaps the most famous moment does look a bit like a flash of lightning out of a clear sky when Augustine hears a young child chanting "Tole legge, tole legge." As far as I can tell, he was playing, and he or she was playing an ancient game of jacks. You can translate that to mean "take and collect," "take and collect." But Augustine heard that as "take and read," and he reads from St. Paul's epistles, and is suddenly flooded with this sense of security in God's grace and a willingness to give himself over to God's mercy. But as you say, this is the end of a very long process in which he really tried to taste everything the world had to offer. He did want truth, even though he was maybe not prepared to pay the cost of finding truth, but he was interested in philosophy. He was trying to build a career as an orator and as a teacher of rhetoric. And also the sins of the flesh held great sway over him. In fact, that was really the last hurdle that that he had to overcome. And along the way, of course, famously, his mother, St. Monica, prayed for him faithfully over many, many years.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, one thing I find very interesting, as someone who I've written quite a number of biographies over the years, and sometimes to my own students, I talk about, you know, if you want to find the truth about somebody, where would you find the truth about someone most accurately, in a biography of them or in their autobiography? As a question to ponder, right, if you're looking for truth. Because obviously, if you're writing an autobiography, you're writing about yourself. There's all sorts of temptations to embellish, hide, or to protect one's own reputation or the reputation of others. So would you maybe with Augustine's confessions in mind, which before we go into maybe a longer discussion, to what extent would you describe Augustine's confessions as the prototype of the genre of autobiography?
Well, yeah, that's actually a really big question. Augustine is sometimes credited with or blamed for the invention of the Western notion of the self. And of course, confessions are exhibit A in this case. The facts of the matter are actually a lot more complicated. Often I find students pick up the confessions expecting an autobiography. And then you start to make certain observations about it. For example, Augustine does have a brother, but we don't find out about him until book 5 or 6 or something, right? It really is missing a lot of important data if we're expecting an autobiography. And so I think it's better to kind of think about, well, what does Augustine say his aims are in this work? And then to see the autobiography or the autobiographical elements of the text as in service of those greater aims.
And those greater aims are?
Well, yeah, there are a couple ways of looking at this. One is to sort of look at it from the perspective of early in his career. In the fall of 386, after Augustine has decided to receive baptism and enter the Catholic Church, he goes on this kind of retreat with his mother and a brother and some students and some other friends. And a few of his earliest works come out of that period. And in one of them, the soliloquies, and Augustine, by the way, coined the term soliloquia, right? Conversations with my lonesome.
Right. Wow.
He invented the term for this text. And he opens both books of it with a prayer. And in the second book, he has this beautiful line. The Latin is lovely. He says to the Lord, Noverum me, noverum te. May I know myself and may I know thee. Augustine really sought a kind of clear-eyed understanding of God and of himself as God's creature. And I think we can see the confessions as part of a very long process of seeking an answer to that question. Now, part of the answer to that question, and in some ways the answer to that question, is what Augustine writes about the confessions at the end of his life. It was about 3 years or so before his death, 3 or 4 years, he actually made a list of all of his works and kind of revisited them. You can call them the revisitations, the retractationes in Latin, the retreatments, reconsiderations. And when he comes to the confessions, he says that, well, I wrote my confessions in 13 books, and the purpose of them is to raise minds and hearts to the praise of God.
Okay, so he wrote it with, if you like, an objective purpose, mm-hmm. which was to raise our minds and hearts to God. So in other words, to lead us to prayer, right? Mm-hmm. And to a knowledge of God. But how would you describe the relationship? I suppose we're now moving into the realm of philosophy. Mm-hmm. The relationship between the subjective aspect of know thyself mm-hmm. in the service of the objective, which is to know God and reality as it is.
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question, and the answer Augustine is going to give, essentially in the Confessions, is that the two cannot be disentangled. When when he is far from God, he describes himself as being scattered. I think this is one of the reasons that the confessions still speak to us so much today, because so many people can relate to this experience of kind of an existential fragmentation, that my life is sort of all over the place. I don't know how to make sense. I can't give a clear-eyed account of myself. And Augustine comes to see that that's an effect of his sin, that this is what sin does. It turns us away from God, who is our beginning and our end and our provident sustainer. And when we do that, we make a shambles of ourselves and our experience of all of creation. He says that he uses language of going to pieces, right? That things become incoherent. And so the quest for an authentic kind of self-knowledge is actually predicated upon that turn toward God, coming to know God. And then the next step you find is that, well, how do we know God, right? And he says, look, anyone, you know, with a few dollars in their pocket for an education can learn to say true things about God that the great philosophers have been able to discover. But he finds that this is really insufficient, right? Because this doesn't necessitate this kind of new personal existential posture toward God. And the kind of knowledge of God that Augustine lands on is the knowledge of God's mercy, and learning to recognize how even when Augustine was so scattered, God was with him, guiding him toward himself, toward the church.
Wonderful. Now, I think I'd like to conclude maybe with two questions, and they're somewhat the curveballs, only in the sense that they are questions that really require long answers, and you don't have the opportunity to give one.
I'll do what I can. Yeah.
Basically, what I'd like to ask is if you could give us a quick panoramic overview of Augustine's place throughout the history of the church. And then the second question, but I'll answer that one first, but the second question will be, how do you see his, if you like, perennial relevance to us in the 21st century? But first of all, so from his own time, you know, how influential was he in his own time? And then how did that influence play itself out in the following, you know, centuries?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So Augustine is very much a son of the Western Church. He obviously speaks and writes and thinks in Latin. Scholars debate how much Greek he knew. He had some familiarity, but he was certainly not a Greek scholar like, say, his friend and sometimes sparring partner, St. Jerome. But he's heir to a very rich North African tradition in which St. Cyprian in the 3rd century really holds pride of place, along with Tertullian, who's a more complicated figure before that. But of course, Augustine enters the church in Italy under St. Ambrose at Milan. And so Augustine's experience of the church is informed by all these different issues and conversations that are happening in the Western church. At the same time, he does keep tabs, as far as he's able, on what's going on in the eastern half of the church. Be that as it may, it really is in the West that that Augustine's particular contributions to theology, by which, of course, I mean a systematic articulation of the doctrine that's received from the apostles, takes hold and is really more prominent.
Okay, wonderful. Now, to what extent was he eclipsed or not by the scholasticism of the High Middle Ages from St. Thomas Aquinas, etc.?
Yeah, that's another really complicated question. Now, of course, the text par excellence for the scholastics, apart from sacred scripture, was the Sentences of Peter Lombard, which actually is organized along the lines of an Augustinian framework that's provided by Augustine's work, De Doctrina Christiana, on Christian teaching. So in a lot of ways, even where Thomas and some of the other scholastics with the reception of Aristotle are going to part ways with Augustine, he remains the most towering patristic authority in their thought, and he still continues to set the terms of many of the debates that they had.
Okay. And so, just to conclude our discussion of the confessions of St. Augustine and indeed St. Augustine's legacy in the broader sense. Now, we're now in the 21st century of the Christian era. What can we learn as 21st century people from St. Augustine?
You know, one of the most puzzling things about the Confessions when students first encounter it is the fact that the autobiography seems to leave off, well, in terms of him talking about his past after book 9. In book 10, he sort of gives us an interim report on where he's at now. And then all of a sudden he goes into this kind of befuddling, complicated exegesis of Genesis 1. And students don't know what to make of this. But this is actually, I think, a place where Augustine can be very important to us. Because as Augustine sought God and sought a renewed understanding of himself as being redeemed by God, he saw that the story of his own life only became a story, only became coherent in light of the biblical narrative. And that this account of himself as a sinner who's being redeemed by the mercy of Christ meant that he had to inhabit that story of Scripture ever more deeply. You can see how he tries to weave it into his own language and how he's trying to see his own life, as I say, in light of the story of salvation in Scripture. I think that that's a really, really important insight for people who, in a lot of ways, have lost their story,
right,
and can relate to that sense of fragmentation.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if we're getting back to basics, fundamentals, that psychology is understanding the meaning of the soul. And what Augustine seems to be saying, well, if you want to understand the meaning of the soul, psychology in the modern parlance,
sure,
you need to become theological. In other words, you have to have a knowledge of God in order to have a knowledge of the soul, and a knowledge of the self. And that, yeah, absolutely a timeless, priceless piece of wisdom goes right back to St. Augustine. John Sehorn, thanks so much for being my guest on this edition of Faith and Culture from the Augustine Institute.
Thanks so much for having me. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.